Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petts. This is the second of the four specials of catch-up interviews with a few guests who I have spoken with before. I've chosen those who I think especially relied on the outdoors and nature for their well-being and even for their living, to see how they've coped, really, with the restrictions caused by the pandemic and how they're feeling now those restrictions are starting to lift. This episode is with eco-psychotherapist, writer, adventurer, hundreds of other things, Ruth Allen. I've spoken to her previously about her solo expedition across the mountains in Bosnia, which she undertook in about 2018. An incredible trip, and that you can go back through the archives and discover. Her therapy takes people outside and uses nature connection to enhance that therapeutic experience. Her book Grounded is out now in hardback, and it's a beautiful thing. And you know, she's just this all-round wise owl, so I was super keen to have another chat with her and to get her take on everything, really. So here we are on Skype. It was very nice to see her face, and I hope you enjoy. I think last time we spoke on air was about your Bosnia trip.
Gosh, yeah, coming back from after that, wasn't it?
After that, yeah, we did a little check-in once you'd finished.
God, life before all of this.
Right?
Mm.
Quite different.
The heady past of 2018.
Yeah.
It was when I did the Bosnia trip. So maybe we talked earlier on in like 2019 or something, but certainly feels like a long time ago.
So I'm going to ask you a very broad question.
Yeah.
How are you?
I am okay. I'm quite steady at the moment. I feel like the last year has been a lot of ups and downs, a lot of extremes of emotion lurching around the place. One minute feeling okay, and then feeling overwhelmed and despairing and miserable. But I feel like in the last few months, I feel like I've weathered the winter fairly well, and I have been quite stable in my mood. For a little while now, so I think I'm in reasonable emotional nick, I think.
Do you think that's an adaptation to the situation? Do you think we can just get used to it, you know, to a certain point? We get used to a level of discomfort that felt almost unbearable when it began?
Yeah, I do. I think we're quite adaptive in that way. I think there's something about surviving in an unnatural situation. I think we can probably go on for quite a long time. We do adapt into that. But I always feel the background trace of agitation, of wanting more and wanting something else. Or, you know, I've kind of got the sense that it feels a little bit artificial, because it feels like I can't get away from the things that feel like they're missing. But I feel at the moment feel sort of relatively peaceful around that. But I'm never not aware. I suppose it's a bit like when you lose somebody in your life, like a grief, that you just start to adapt and make peace with. But you're always aware that they've gone. And I think I feel a bit like that this year, as I'm kind of adapting. But yeah, and it's not like, oh, I'm so utterly changed and I could do this forever now.
Oof. No, definitely not. Right. But the big difference with that, I suppose, because that's really well, that, yeah, I really agree with that. But the difference is that it will change again and life will come flooding back in, which I suppose with grief, it doesn't so much unless they somehow come back again. But I think that in itself, just then adapting back to life, is going to be a whole other experience that isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. We are in this ambiguous zone, I think, where you can't, it's very hard to grieve something that's still ongoing and we're still living in, I think, quite a traumatic way. You know, our nervous systems are still really reeling at the last year. We're on our knees energy wise. I think a lot of people are very fatigued. And there's not, it's like, what do I do with this? How do I place this? There's kind of everything that's been and there's everything that's ahead. And so it doesn't, there's no real place for rest and grief. Yeah, I think we're just living in this, I was thinking of it the other day, like a perpetual motion machine. It's like, which is theoretically, you know, impossible because you've got nothing else coming in to the system. It can't keep itself going, but it feels a bit like that. I feel like we just go on and on and on and on in this, and somehow the machine keeps going, the cogs keep turning. But yes, I think there is going to come it's changing again, things are opening again, and that's going to bring a whole other new set of adaptations and changes and transitions. And I guess we all know that's coming and that we have to face that again.
Yeah, which isn't necessarily going to be just a straightforward joyful sensation.
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think I suppose in my work it's, there's a skewing of the data, as it were, because I'm not going to be seeing the people who are just so ready and joyful about it all. But I do get the feeling that there's a lot to face in terms of worries and what's life going to be like on the other side, and what do we do and what do we make of it, and the pressure to maybe feel like we should be wholly changed by this whole thing, right, as well as the sort of pressure to go back to normal. There's not much rest in that either, is there? It's like, how am I supposed to be? And we're looking around perhaps for cues on that, and it's not clear, I don't think.
No, yeah, it's really, I mean, it's quite an extraordinary thing to live through if you can kind of separate yourself out from it a bit. It's but yeah, I don't think I will really know how I feel about it till it's over, and then you sort of breathe a bit maybe, hopefully, and just be like, blimey, how did we do that?
Be the rebound of that. I think when, you know, when the pressure is off a bit more, that is typically when, you know, when you get to exhale and you're no longer holding your breath, that's when the tears come and the panic and the sort of, oh my god. So I think I'm sort of feel I brace for that in others and maybe a little bit in myself, that there's going to be some strange looking or seemingly incongruous reactions, but I think will make total sense, but will feel to people quite foreign. Like, why am I feeling this? Why am I not elated? Why am I finding this hard?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is maybe some sort of lesson in it. If you could be some kind of like Zen master, then the resistance to it has caused us a lot of discomfort, hasn't it? But I mean, it's so hard not to resist it and then to cling on to the facts of it'll be over soon, another couple of months. Like, we're kind of resisting the fact that it's happened in some ways, and I'm sure there's something in there if we could get to a point of accepting it more. But then that also feels very difficult, and then the normal structures aren't in place for you to have maybe the support you need to be able to accept that it's happening, because that might bring in all of that grief a bit too heavily. So we kind of hold on, don't we, until maybe it feels safe enough to let go, which is probably the case with any sort of trauma.
That's right. And I think I decided for myself at some point, and I wonder now how soon it was, but certainly I was onto it fairly early on, I think a year ago, of needing to yield into this a little bit. And I saw people, like you say, that the hurt that was happening when people would like bank on it changing and they'll keep booking holidays that got cancelled, and I felt quite conscious in the beginning of, okay, and I think my way, and is the way that I do deal with things generally, is okay, so this thing's been taken away, so I'm going to try and take control of this by really trying to take some ownership of it. So for example, my adaptation early on was, right, if I'm going to be local, then I'm going to get really local. Like, I'm going to try and I'm not just going to take this thing that's being imposed on us. I'm also going to, you know, I'm going to make a point of using my car as little as I can. I'm going to really stay local, really adhere to the rules and make it a bit of a project. So in that felt like claiming, for me, that felt like a way of claiming some autonomy within the restrictions we were being given.
Yeah.
And that to me felt like yielding into it and surrendering a bit, rather than, you know, no kind of repeatedly booking holidays and no letting myself go there thinking this will be over soon, this will be over soon. Just an absolute kind of determination to be like, well, this is what's in front of me, this is what I've got, it's gonna have to be enough.
Yeah. And that claiming of autonomy is what I think when anyone goes through some sort of traumatic event, I think the knock-on effect of that is that you don't really feel in control at all. Mm-hmm. And you've kind of looped, because things have just happened to you, it can feel like, so you've lost that sense of control. So yeah, regaining some autonomy is like key to recovery. And yeah, it feels like if you could just have some sense of that throughout this time, then it would, yeah, it certainly would help you out a lot. Mm-hmm. Even if you could just do that, focus on that day, be like, okay, today I'm just gonna make sure I walk for an hour. And yeah, you know, I'm gonna, I don't know, maybe do 10 minutes of yoga or something if you're able to, but just putting in something that feels like I can make this happen today.
Yeah,
and that really helps.
Yeah, you have to make your own container as safe as you can. And I think that's much easier when you know something about sort of trauma and the way it works and the whole notion of that kind of containment and safety. And I think that has been a real saving grace for me this year, in just like, how can I make my container safe for me? And even with everything that's sort of been taken away, things that are precious to me, you know, on an average year, we travel around quite a lot on weekends. I'd be going all over the place. I work outside as much as I can. It's like vital for me, the outdoors. And so, I don't know, I was really freaked out in the beginning, because I was like, this is my one resource. I can't do without this. I can't, the government can't take this from me. Proper panic.
Yeah, exactly the same. I hear you.
Yeah, and that was really hard, and I really felt, it was a real reckoning in those early days of, this can't happen, it's not fair, it's a no, like that just total denial.
Right.
But you can't stay in, well, you can, I suppose, but I sort of felt I can't stay in this denial for a year. I have to just face this, and I have to find new resources. I can't, it really exposed to me the reliance I have. And I don't think that there's anything safe in being reliant on anything, whether it's, you know, running in mountains or it's drugs. Like, if you're too reliant on one thing, there's a lot of potential for failure in the system there. And that woke me up. I thought, I need to have more resources in myself. So that's been a bit of a project this year, is building more resources, inner resources within me.
How have you done that? What have you done?
Therapy.
Have you?
Yeah, so I went back into therapy, found a new therapist, and that set in train a new way of working. Actually, I chose a body movement dance psychotherapist, rather body dance movement psychotherapist, and have consciously wanted to take a big sort of project on around body and movement. And that, I think there was a sense of, okay, I can't move horizontally the way I want to right now. I can't go out in the world. I can't go on long trips. I've got this limited kind of perimeter of space in the kind of village and locality, but I can find out something else about me. So I sort of started that, and then that set me on the road of, I was doing online dance classes, ballet classes, free movement, authentic movement, and just trying to tap into parts of me that have been rejected, because I've sort of said, no, I'm not the kind of person that does that. I go out in the mountains. That's what I do.
Right.
And so I think there came a point last summer where I thought, what else am I? Like, what else can I find out? And then I started creating more and going back to drawing and just trying to be curious about other parts of me that maybe would hold some interest.
Yeah.
That I'm not just a one-trick pony that can only go outside and be in the mountains. And that was very fruitful, actually. I have found parts of me that I think, I quite like that. I like that. I'm a person that likes to do other things.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's almost like, it feels like you would go out almost outside of yourself to experience that kind of feeling of expanse. Mm. And you would always need to see it and be in it. But actually, there's a level of that inside yourself as well.
Yeah,
that you can so, you can find through other ways.
So well explained. Yeah, I think so. And I really feel like that was, at the time, that felt like that's the only option. I can't go outside to get what I need here. And I don't live in an area where there's like art galleries or anything to do. And there's no one here that I can sneak off and see. Yeah. And so there's, you know, that only left me with that kind of, it felt like that only left me with my inner world, really.
Mm. So that's actually, you know, a really big positive to take from it, isn't it? And if you feel like you've added a few more tools to the old toolbox, and maybe you wouldn't have done that if that hadn't have been.
I wouldn't taken. Have done
no,
that.
You wouldn't, no.
I'm absolutely sure of that. It forced my hand to some degree. And but you know, I'm a proactive kind of person. I'm confident to take action, but I was very entrenched in a story of myself. It hurt in the beginning because I felt like aspects of my identity are falling away. They're just crumbling. These things I do and go away and do, and my trips to Scotland and my trips to the lakes and being in the van and just going in, you know, Derbyshire's pretty, well, it's very landlocked and we don't have an awful lot water-wise. So I haven't been swimming much apart from in the river in the summer. And just all these aspects that I feel make me. I felt like we're just being taken away from me. It felt like I was being decimated. And so I think, but I was comfortable before any of that. I was like, I didn't need to challenge that. Whereas and so I wouldn't have done because there wasn't reason to. But that's changed. And I think expanded my own view of myself, helpfully. And yeah, I wouldn't have done, and I'm not going to say, oh, you know, so that's the positive and this is the good thing about the pandemic, because it's, I don't want to be like that, sounds kind of a bit toxic, but I don't know. I think that I'm hopefully going to leave the pandemic with a handful of knowings about myself. I think, okay, I could do restrictions again. I could handle it better this time around.
Right, because I've got this in my back pocket. It's like, okay, I can go to these things if this
and
gets
I think that's important because illness, chronic illness, it's not just pandemic. It's, you know, what happens if I broke a limb and I was, and the whole world was getting on with the stuff and I couldn't for a while.
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Yeah, like illness or injury is the other things probably that make you have to think about those sorts of things.
Frankly, I'm getting older. I mean, I'm not really old, but it's going to happen. It's going to happen where I don't have the energy to keep up with my own desires and intellectual kind of wishes for things. And so I think, and that could feel really disappointing. And so I feel like I'm practicing future scenarios, or have done this year, where I might need to call on more aspects of myself. And that feels quite safe, actually. That feels like I've done myself a favor this year, even though it was kind of painful.
So the therapy that you do is so nature-based and movement-based. So will you bring in any of these new things that you've learnt for yourself now into your own therapeutic practice with others?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, my therapy has changed. I would say it's come on leaps and bounds in the last year. My practice is just so much, I don't know, I'm really liking where my practice is at the moment. And it feels like I've taken a lot, and because I've been in my own therapy again and coming at things quite differently, that is filtering through and it is broadening. Like, I've had to become much more creative and bring in interesting ways of working online that perhaps I wasn't before, just sort of sat in front of the computer, whereas now quite often I'll have sessions, I'll be sat on the floor, or the clients will be sat on the floor. We'll move around a lot, which is how I kind of do my own therapy. And so it's become more creative in that way. And I think, yeah, it's like I love, you know, my outdoor kind of work was decimated there for the first couple of lockdowns. Back out again now, but you know, I couldn't afford to, not everybody wanted to transition to online, and so some clients finished therapy, and so I had to fill in sort of gaps with online, and you carry on working with those people, so my practice isn't going to get to the same percentage outdoors as it was for a while, until, you know, people feel like they've finished with the therapy that's online. So I feel like it's going to take a while to get back to where I was. So I think it's really important to make the most of this medium as well, and not be constantly anxious. Like, I want it to be back to where it was before. It's like, well, it will get there, or it will get, you know, so it will change.
But yeah, it could just be like a more blended version of the two things now.
And I feel like I'm getting a bit more comfortable with that, because I think I've broadened my idea of what nature means in my work. And it's also sort of, it's human nature, body nature, it's movement. It's like who we are, not just outside as a space, as a place with other aspects of nature. So, yeah, I think this year has really turned on its head in many ways my own thinking about quite a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had nothing else to think about. I mean, this is literally, I feel like a really one-dimensional person. I feel like I've worked, and I've thought about work, and I've been consumed with work. And so it could not have changed to have given it that much attention.
I mean, it has definitely been a time of, well, we could all, I guess, varying levels of absorption, sort of self-absorption, maybe, just because of enforced time on our own. Mm-hmm. But that can be both, that doesn't have to be a negative thing, it's a different thing, isn't it? It's I don't really know where I'm going with that, but
yeah,
I think you can put structure around it in different ways other than just sort of I don't want to be negative, it's not really moping about, but there are positive things you can do for yourself in those times where you just can't get out.
I think so, and I know that there was, yeah, it's really hard to strike the right language.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It is. And I remember last year there was a lot of anti sort of, you know, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to feel good. You don't have to be someone doing a project. And and I totally agree with all that.
Yeah.
At the same time, we know that novelty, you know, if you look at the research, novelty is really good for, you know, staving off things like depression and brain and maintaining brain function. We do need a sense of novelty, so I think there is a very natural, it's not people just trying to be all kind of Pollyanna-ish about it, it's kind of, you know, and look at me and I'm just so positive. It's a natural human instinct to seek novelty, whether that's in, you know, a little project, or, you know, we do that because it's a survival instinct in many ways, to keep things ticking over. And so I don't think we should pathologize people that do that, just as we can't pathologize people that don't have the capacity at some point for that. But at some point, we all need to come out and and find, I think, a way. We need to find our own ways through, don't we?
That doesn't necessarily mean by doing things, it doesn't mean that you're in denial and sort of pushing it away and kind of overriding negative feelings.
Yeah,
that's interesting, that, yeah, the novelty thing. But I think we're quite cyclical in it, in that we'll fall into a negative space or an anxious space, and then that can make way for something else that isn't that. I think it's absolutely, for me, it's like amplified those changes in mood every day a lot more. Much more aware of it.
I think there's something I've really learned this year, and working with the therapist I'm working with now, around the natural circular, ongoing, infinite loop of inhale and exhale, really, and really trying to trust the crashes are never permanent crashes. Like, you know, there can be the kind of gut-wrenching misery of it and the despair and the kind of wringing your hands and like, oh, I can't do this and this is awful and feeling awful. And that it does always give way to a new inhale and and then a creativity, you know, and then that will give way to a crash.
Yeah.
And I think I'm really learning to trust that it, not just the inevitability, but actually, well, the inevitability, but also the value of the, there is something in the intake and the exhale, I think, that are both important and they have their own momentum. And I know that when I allow myself just to sort of crash into the despair feelings and just feel that, something else always comes out. It's almost like that's needed, the full exhale, the full despair or something's needed before this kind of, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the fresh intake can begin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a clear out.
Like it's, yeah, it's somehow needed sometimes rather than just storing that in. It's just so inevitable. It has to be felt.
It's also, you know, it's really brave to do that. And it takes quite a lot of courage to do that, I think, because we are quite avoidant creatures and don't necessarily want to go into those depths of it. And if we can kind of skirt above it, then I think that can often be the path that's chosen. So it's, or like that has been taught to us, actually. So yeah, I feel like it's quite a lot of unlearning and then courage to be able to really ride those peaks and troughs out fully.
I think so, and it's quite hard to do if you, especially if you've had an experience of and feel like you've had a crash that you've never come out of, or you feel the repeated intensity. And I know that my wavelength, if you like, is shorter than that. I have plenty of down periods, but mercifully they don't last years and years, or even months. They tend to be like days and weeks, and certainly these days. So I can afford to trust a little bit that I will, but it's scary, like you say, if you haven't, or you've been very wounded in the past and you can't trust the exhale, that you're always then gasping for the inhale in a way.
Amidst all of this, your book came out. Just a small life event.
Just that life event, gosh. Yeah, the book came out, finally, thank God.
Yeah, yeah. So, it was quite recent, last couple of months.
Yep, it was March the 4th, World Book Day. With all the books in the world that I think came out on that. The social media bun fight that it was, it's like with everyone like, look I've got a book.
Oh really? Yeah.
Yeah, ideally I think you want to bring a book out on just some random quiet Tuesday that no one really cares about, you know.
And well yeah, tell us what it's about. Summarize your book for me, please.
It's about how connection with nature, and by connection I go into it in the early chapters, I mean sort of relationship, how a relationship with nature can improve our overall mental health and well-being. And it's sort of centered around this idea of grounded as a way of being, a kind of a gestalt, if you like, rather than just a technique, you know, rather than just sort of standing on the ground, although it sort of starts there. But that it's a way of being in the world, in your life, the way we deal with things, the kind of how we nurture a quality of kind of unflappability, I suppose, and sense of rootedness, whatever happens. So I'm just looking at it on the shelf.
Yeah, I'm looking at it just next to me on the table here.
And so then it's broken into sort of themes that I feel are important. It's personal and professional. It's all very sort of research evidence based, but it's also personal in as much as the themes that I've chosen to include are things that have been important to me. So there's obviously things that aren't in there, but it's what's made a difference to me in being, I would say, fairly grounded. I hope that I am. I hope that's one thing. If I'm nothing else, I think the one thing I am is pretty grounded. So yeah, so it goes through everything from sort of embracing the mystery of life and seeking stillness and understanding wildness, what that means inside and out, shifting perspective, the value of being present, all these sort of things. Takes it thematically, and it's hopefully it's in nice bite-sized chunks with some nice photos as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a very pretty book. It's very nice. But yeah, I liked it because it was, you did have all the theory in there and the sort of research based stuff, and then you've got the practical things that you can go and do, or and then the personal of how it's affected you or what you've seen change with people. And I found it actually reassuring. It's a sense of, it's a real sense of reassurance, I think, that runs through it as well.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. That seems to keep coming out.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And affirming and quite, gentle and companionable in that way. It's not sort of, it's not a hard challenge.
Right. Yeah. And I feel, yeah, so often books, I guess, in the self-help genre, it's very self-focused, isn't it? It's like it's all within you and it's yours and da da da. And it is, but also the sense that, you know, nature or the rhythm of nature and the earth is going on and we can tap into that. I think that is the feeling of reassurance. There's something else just sort of alongside you that can kind of hold your hand through it all a little bit. I felt that sense with it.
I love that, yeah, because it feels like that. That to me is music to my ears, because I feel like that, I hope, in some way is how it is to be in a therapeutic relationship when I work with people. It's what I hope the book would be to the reader, and it's what I feel like nature is to me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that kind of nice, there's that perpetually unfolding sort of reassurance, the holding of the hand sort of thing. So that's really nice to hear.
How does it feel? I mean, is it just horribly vulnerable making, or is it exciting, or is it, oh my god, I can't believe this is out there, and what judgment will I get, you know? Yeah, or is it a range of all of it? Yeah.
I think it felt really exposing. I felt like there's nowhere to hide.
Yeah.
Book out, I've sort of declared my hand in a way, and then that came with a feeling of, oh, it's not going to be good enough, it's not full on enough, it's not bold and brash enough, it's maybe it's too gentle, maybe it's twee. Or and then there was the wave of, oh god, the first people that are going to put that into words on reviews, and is that going to be really crushing? And so it kind of went through the full gamut of insecurity about it, but as time passes, I feel it's okay. It doesn't have to be all things. It doesn't have to be all things to everyone. In it's not all things to me. It's a snapshot on something that matters to me, but it's not my life's work and unifying theory.
Yeah, putting yourself out there in whichever form it happens is always slightly.
Yeah, I really struggle with the kind of, you know, it's very permanent book as well, and you can't bury it like you can a blog post or something.
Right, yeah, you can't just
take it off
all shelves.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting, because it really, you know, I really, really wanted to sort of promote it, but I've got like one hand hitting at the kind of retweets and reposting. And on the other feed, you know, the other hand was like over my eyes thinking, I can't do this. This is too much. It's grotesque. It's ego driven. It's like, what? I didn't write a book just to hide it away.
You know? Right. Exactly. It's really good for people as well. You know, it's a useful thing. It's it would be quite ironic if a book that you've called Grounded makes you really ungrounded.
Yeah, there have been times where I've got like forehead on the book, like, come on, just reground me, please.
Things look like they're now going to start opening up. Have you got something in mind that you just desperately want to do as soon as we can? Like, what's your, if you've got something brewing or
I am absolutely desperate to get up a mountain and to get into water, so the sooner I can get up a hill of some kind of height, that would be really good, and I'm very excited about that. That's in practice, that's probably going to be a cheeky kind of quick jaunt up to the Lake District, and hopefully combine that with a swim in the lake. And I just think I will soak that into my bone marrow, you know. Yeah. I think that's the thing, it's reset that gratitude so much, that whereas before I had to sort of jack up the system every weekend to get that to feel like I was, you know, I needed some regularity, whereas I feel like I could have one trip and that will set me up for another period. So that's one thing I've learned, is I can live on, you know, small rations, as it turns out. So I think that, yeah, swimming, I really want to get out of the country. Yeah. But I'm okay with the fact that's probably not going to happen this year. So I think, you know, probably like a lot of people, Lake District and North Wales are in my sight line. I feel like I need to remind myself that that part of my identity is still there. All this talk of, you know, that I've said, and if I'm getting comfortable with other parts of myself, I do still need to remind myself that those old, steady, reliable parts that I love about me are still there.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I thought she had a lot of really interesting things to say there. If you thought, oh, I really like that episode, and what I'd love to do is support that show, then you can. Wonderful news. You can head to ko-fi.com/growingwild. Ko-fi is K-O-F-I. And you press the little donate button and chuck me a few quid. That would be amazing, because it helps me keep making the show. You can get in touch on email, which is growingwildreverb@gmail.com. Or I'm on Instagram, @growingwildfm. I like to have no consistency through my contact mediums. Everyone uses the names up. It's super annoying. I will be back with, I've got two more episodes in this little run. So until the next time, stay safe, go well. See you soon.